I'm a girl, so I can't be good at math.
I'm a girl, so I can only be the vice president rather than the president. I'm a girl, so pursuing a PhD is pointless. I'm a girl, so I have to be more sensible and more considerate. In this episode, we attempt to figure out how is it that women are socially conditioned to see themselves as the second sex in education. Rousseau, one of the most brilliant philosophers in history, famously declared, "All the education of women should be relative to men. Woman is made to yield to man and to bear his injustices." That was how men once thought about women's education. But has it really changed today? In The Second Sex, Simone de Beauvoir argues that education has long been a critical tool for society to impose rigid gender roles on women, shaping them as the other rather than as independent individuals. This not only contradicts the vision of SDG 5, achieve gender equality, but also undoubtedly hinders social sustainability. Yet, Beauvoir also believes that education could serve as a tool for women's liberation, but only if it breaks free from the chains of gender discrimination, provides equal access to resources, and fosters independent thinking. Virginia Woolf once lamented, "Any woman born with a great gift in the 16th century would certainly have gone crazed, shot herself, or ended her days in some lonely cottage outside the village, half witch, half wizard, feared and mocked at." We hope this won't happen in the 21st century. Women deserve an education that doesn't limit them but uplifts them, allowing them to break barriers and redefine possibilities.
Senior high school education, the system of separating arts and the science subjects often carries a strong gender stereotype. This impression subconsciously influences students' choice and future career development. According to the traditional beliefs, science subjects are regarded as more rational and hard areas of knowledge, while liberal arts subjects are associated with emotional and linguistic abilities. Because boys are often seen as more rational and logical, so they are more likely to choose science subjects, where girls are seen as more emotional and therefore choose arts subjects. My growth has been largely influenced by it as well, because I assumed that as a girl I couldn't be good at math, so I never put much effort into learning math or physics. Then the unsatisfactory results in exam just reinforced my belief that I wasn't good at science subjects, so without a doubt, I chose the art subjects as well, which limits my choice of major in the university to a large extent. This gender stereotype is also reflected in the expectations of families, teachers, and even classmates. For example, parents may think that the girl is not suited to math or physics, believing that her future is more suited to careers such as teaching, nursing, or secretarial work. In contrast, boys are encouraged to choose science fields such as engineering and computing. Such biases lead to the fact that students may be stressed to choose, very often not on the basis of personal interest or ability, but rather on the societal expectations of gender roles.
So my mother is actually the first person that comes to mind. She's a woman that I really, really admire. She was born in a time and a place where she had very, very few choices, but she didn't let that limit any of her aspirations because she wanted to study. One story that I'm always reminded of is how she went into labor with me, her first child, during a university exam, but she finished her exam before she got up to go to the hospital. She graduated, went on to do her master's and then her PhD here in England. And that move, that journey didn't just change her life. Obviously, it changed the trajectory of all of our lives. And I imagine family members to come in the future as well. And like any other kid, growing up, I didn't actually appreciate how extraordinary her journey was. I just resented and very often resisted the expectations that she had of me. It was only really when I got older that I saw her, like really woman to woman saw her, and started to understand and appreciate just how unordinary her journey was, and how it was really a story of a quiet revolution, because somehow she managed to navigate her way through a life that asked for so much, gave so little back, and somehow carved a space where on the one hand she can kind of hold up enough norms for us while also creating a space for us to explore other freedoms that she didn't have. Was it easy? Was it fun? No, it really wasn't. Was it worth it? She would probably give you a resounding yes. But for me, her story is a little bit more interesting because of the tension that it creates or carries for me, because it's not too far away from the conversations that we've had on privilege and success, but more specifically, you know, for her as a woman, you know, what that success meant in terms of the standards and who sets them and who benefits from them and what's in her way and what reality looks like and at what cost. She very successfully expanded her capabilities through education. She used education to achieve a freedom to be and do what she thought was valuable. But I just wonder if she would have chosen differently if her passions, her real true passions and aspirations, were valued. My mom, she loved art. She still loves art. She finds so much joy in getting her hands dirty and creating and expressing herself through that. She was also really good at sport. She actually had a scholarship to play volleyball while at university. But all of those sides of her were to put, you know, put to one side, because she demanded of herself, like, she needed to prove what she was capable of. She needed to challenge her world. She wanted to be successful. She wanted to be inspiring. She wanted to make everyone proud. And while that is something really inspiring, and it taught me that anything is possible, her journey also taught me that, you know, how easily our plight can actually lead us away from the essence of who we are when it comes to our passions. And I just wonder if we can, in this modern age, put as much attention, you know, to reclaiming those parts of ourselves that often get left out of the conversation or the plan, as we move forwards and upwards towards this idea of success that we have. Ultimately, I'm inspired by the important work that we're doing when it comes to gender, and so acutely aware of the long, long, long road that we still have to go for every girl to feel safe enough and supported enough and empowered enough to reach for whatever stars she wants to reach for. But I also hold this question in my mind: if we could truly choose, would we be able to give ourselves permission to choose ourselves, our authentic whole selves, with all of our passions inside of whatever definition of success we have?
This is Yixin, and for this episode, I want to start it with a troubling quote from Rousseau, one of the greatest philosophers in history, not her story. He said, all the education of women should be relative to men. Woman is made to yield to man and to bear his injustices. Really ridiculous, right? Well, this seems might seem a little bit outdated, but my question is, has the mindset really changed in these days? Simone de Beauvoir, in her groundbreaking book, The Second Sex, I don't know if you ever read this book, I strongly recommend it. It's a wonderful, brilliant work, the best about gender equality book. She argues that education has long been a tool for imposing rigid gender roles on women, shaping them as the other, not the first gender. This doesn't just impact individuals' lives, it hinders societies as a whole. Take my own journey, for example. I grew up in a working class family in rural China. I don't know if you guys listened to the first episode. If you listened, you probably know me better. And well, this challenge of inequality is about the first episode, it was stark. The gendered expectations played on girls were even harder to ignore. In primary school, boys were encouraged to explore, play sports, and take risks. Meanwhile, girls were told to sit still, be quiet, and help out. I realize it's not just one country's problem, I guess, issue for girls. It happened all over the world. And by the time I reached middle school and high school, these rules had solidified. Girls were expected to excel in soft subjects like literatures, but men's mathematics and science, no, those were boys' subjects. And the leadership rules, girls could be wise. And for leadership rules, girls could be vice presidents, sure, but not the presidents. These expectations don't just shape what we study, they shape how we see ourselves. They instill a quiet doubt and whispers like, basically every day, you are not good enough. This conditioning extends beyond school. A friend of mine once told me, why you want to pursue a PhD? You'll just end up being, overqualified and will scaring all men away. The idea that education is pointless for women isn't just harmful, it's absurd, yet it persists. And often clogged in seemingly well-meaning advice to be practical or focus on family. Virginia Woolf captured this struggle situation in her book, A Room of One's Own. She said, any woman born with a great gift in the 16th century would certainly have gone crazy, shot herself, or end her days in some lonely cottage outside the village. Half witch, half wizard, feared and mocked. Well, we made a big process since both time. Many women today still feel the weight of this invisible chance. Whether it's being excluded from STEM fields, facing unequal pay, or being overlooked for leadership roles. These barriers are real, and they are systemic. Even at the university level, I've seen this play out in classroom and discussions. Women are often more hesitant to speak up, even in our seminars. Fearing judgment or dismissal. This isn't because they lack ability, I mean. It's because society has kind of conditioned them to doubt themselves. Like I said, always whispers, you are not good enough. But here's the good news. Education could also be a tool for liberation. I think that's what it really means. Bonova believed that education could free women if it breaks away from gender discrimination, ensure equal access to resources, and fosters independent thinking. I think that's what we are doing nowadays, and just like I said, a big process. But we need more. I have witnessed this potential firsthand. In recent years, China has seen more and more women pursuing higher education and breaking into fields once dominated by men. Programs promoting girls in STEM, leadership, workshops, and scholarships for women has started to change the narrative. But process isn't enough. We need to complete a shift in how we approach education, not just for women, but for everyone. Education should be empowered girls to say, I'm good at math. I could be the president. Pursuing PhD is worth it. I don't have to conform to what society expects from me. I can define my own path. As we wrap up, I want to leave you with a quote from Bonova. One is not born, but rather becomes a woman. In the same way, education isn't just about what we're told, it's about what we allowed to become. Okay, this is Yixin. Remember, education isn't just about conforming to expectations, it's about bringing them. Thank you guys for listening.